Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Now, some Iowa names have been changing lately in an effort to right some old wrongs. First, when Johnson County was named, it was named for the Vice President of the United States at the time, Richard Mentor Johnson. He was Vice President to President Martin Van Buren from 1837 to 1841. He had no ties to the state of Iowa, and from a modern perspective, he has an ugly past as a slave owner and racist. Even in his time, he was a very unpopular vice president and dropped from the ticket before Van Buren's unsuccessful bid for re-election. The movement to rename Johnson County has been growing in recent years, and in a clever move to right a wrong and avoid the costs of changing the name, Johnson County has a new namesake. Her name is Lulu Merle Johnson, and she was the first Black woman in Iowa to earn a doctorate degree. She earned her PhD in history in 1941 at the University of Iowa and went on to have a stellar career in higher education. She passed away in 1995. Here to tell us a little bit about Lulu Merle Johnson is Leslie Schwalm, Chair and Professor of History and Gender, Women and Sexuality Studies at the University of Iowa. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you here. And let's talk about Lulu Merle Johnson. I mentioned that she earned her PhD in 1941, but I want to go back a little bit before that. Tell me where she grew up and some background of her family.
Well, she has a fascinating family history. Her paternal grandfather, who had been enslaved, bought his sons 160 acres of superb farmland in Taylor County, Iowa. And so Lulu's father and brother established what was widely reported as excellent farms, just outside of Gravity in Taylor County. And so the two families settled there, grew up together, and were the only African-American families in their area, really launched a family that had really incredible connections across the state for the rest of the 20th century.
And education became very important to this family, right?
It did indeed. Many members of the Johnson family would attend either the University of Iowa or Iowa State. And also the family had a number of firsts connected to the University of Iowa, including the first African-American basketball player who played in the Big Ten, and the first football player who played in the Big Ten. So that, two important firsts.
Yeah. And Lulu Merle Johnson came to the University of Iowa. When did she go to the university, and what did she go to study?
Well, she came in 1926, and she initially did not intend to study history, but she enjoyed her very first history class and immediately became a convert to the study of history. So she came in 1926, and she earned not only her undergraduate degree, but her master's degree by 1930. And that was quite an astounding achievement.
That is incredible.
So many courses that she had enough credit hours to do that. And she also began a path of study that was very unusual. Her master's degree essay studied Afro-Canadians in the 19th century.
When she came to the University of Iowa, I just want to mention, she was one of a small population of Black students at the University of Iowa. In fact, there were schools in the South that would give Black students scholarships to Northern schools so that they wouldn't come to their institutions. But this still was a very segregated institution. So what was studying at the university like for her?
Well, it was very challenging. At the time she attended, we know that there were at least 64 Black students here, but most of them were men. Only 14 of them were women. And what they encountered was both a rigidly segregated university and also a segregated community. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult to find lodging. The students were disrespected by their professors. Dormitories, of course, would not accommodate them. So there were, very early in the 20th century, Black students began to protest this discrimination and racism. In the 1920s, they asked the state NAACP to protest the institutional racism they encountered. They found that every turn they made, they encountered some version of Jim Crow. There's one particularly interesting story about a swimming test that all students were supposed to pass. And the university offered to Black students, well, you don't really have to take the test. And the reason the university said that is because they believed, according to the racist ideas at the time, that they had to drain the pool after a Black student used it in order for a white student then to be able to enter the pool. And the Black student said, no, thank you. We would like to take the test. And they gave various times for when they were available. So in essence, what they did is they made segregation a burden for the institution rather than simply a burden they had to bear. And Lulu was involved in all of these kinds of protests. So she was here at a very important time.
She earned her PhD in history in 1941 and then went on to have a really stellar career in higher education. We only have a couple of minutes left, but give me a little bit of an idea of what she did with her career.
Well, first of all, it's important to note that she was one of only 10 Black women who had earned a PhD at an American university. And also, because discrimination prevented the hiring of Black women in many white institutions, she had a long career in Black historical colleges and universities, serving as a history professor, teaching Black history, and ending up at her last position as Dean of Women, as well as a history professor. And it's from there at Cheney State that she would retire.
She passed away in 1995. And I know that you have spoken with at least one of her descendants. How does the family feel about this honor, having Johnson County named after her?
Oh, they're quite delighted that, that we are recognizing their relatives' contributions and importance. They're very delighted, and they're also very mindful that her experience here is, an example of what discrimination and racism has meant to Black Iowans. So, it's that bittersweet, finally some recognition, but also let's not ignore the challenges that she encountered and overcame.
What do you feel the significance of this is? Why do you think it's important?
Oh, I think it's a perfect change to the county's eponym, because she represents really what Johnson County offers to the state of Iowa, that kind of farm-to-faculty experience. But also she helps us grapple with a part of the state's history that we don't often talk about or acknowledge. So I think it's perfect.
Leslie Schwalm, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks, Charity.
Leslie Schwalm is Chair and Professor of History and Gender, Women and Sexuality Studies at the University of Iowa. We've been talking about Lulu Merle Johnson, the first Black woman to earn a PhD in the state of Iowa. She earned that PhD in 1941, and now Johnson County will be named after her. Another name change recently took place in eastern Iowa. The creek and park in Marion, long known as Squaw Creek Park, have been renamed. Squaw is a term that has long been offensive to Native Americans, heard as a racist and sexist slur. The new name is Wanatee Park, and the creek is now Wanatee Creek. The inspiration for the new name is Jean Adeline Morgan Wanatee, better known as Adeline Wanatee. She was many things, including being the first woman elected to the Meskwaki Tribal Council, and and is one of only two Meskwaki women who've been inducted into the Iowa Women's Hall of Fame, an honor she received in 1993. We invited her granddaughter, Suzanne Wanity, to be part of today's conversation, but she felt very strongly that the woman to talk to about this is Mary Bennett with the Special Collections at the State Historical Society of Iowa, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for inviting us here today.
Well, thank you for being here. And give me a little bit of background. How did this name change come about?
Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge that we're going to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday, and I hope everyone takes time to be mindful of the special respect and recognition we should give to the Indigenous people of our nation. And it's important to realize that they've been on this land since time immemorial. And so we want to show our appreciation and gratitude to that story by changing the name of this physical feature up there that then has the name of a park. But I have to go back a minute and give credit specifically to Isla Crosswhite. She's a Native American that grew up in Cedar Rapids, and she was offended by the name of this park, and she decided that every day that we allow the use of the word squaw to exist in our city, we display our racism and our willful ignorance for the world we see. So on July 1st of this year, she wrote an editorial in the Cedar Rapids Gazette, which really talked about the lack of Indigenous-centered education being the root of the problem, because people don't understand the significance of this story. And so I think it started with her. And then we come to Dennis Gromat, who's the director of the Linn County Conservation Board, and he had just passed a strategic plan last year that said that in the spirit of inclusion for everyone, the name that is derogatory and widely accepted as a slur should no longer be validated. And they want to strengthen their efforts to apply inclusivity policies from the management of their parks and future areas. So he began to work with Leah Rogers of Tallgrass Historians and John Dorshek of the Office of the State Archaeologist, and eventually they swung around to talk to me to see what we might do about this. And the name that came up was Adeline Wanity, because she was the first woman inducted into the Iowa Women's Hall of Fame. She was a very notable Meskwaki leader. And rather than use a term that's racist, offensive, and misogynist, something that's clearly an ethnic and sexual slur and creates a very bad impression, we decided it'd be better to name a person that we can honor for her accomplishments and use it as a learning opportunity to see why the Meskwaki are so significant to our state's history and why they deserve our attention.
Well, let's talk more about Adeline Wanity. She really was an incredible woman. Tell me a little bit about her.
Well, Adeline Wanity was born in 1910 and passed away in 1996. She was born on the Meskwaki settlement, comes from a long line of leadership out there. She attended the Sac and Fox Day School in Tama, the Flandreau Indian School in South Dakota, and then returned to Tama to get her eighth grade education at the Tama Public Schools. She and her husband raised seven children out of the settlement. So first and foremost, she's a mother and a grandmother and an aunt and a sister. And she became really an important educator out there and a role model at a state and national level. Even in 1954, she appeared on a WOI program at Iowa State, similar to your program called The Talk of the Town, where she was trying to fight for self-determination in the education of their children, just so they could continue to invest in their own traditional teachings, but also make sure their children were not being subjected to racist teaching environments, for example, at the South Tama schools. They did not achieve that dream of hers that she expressed in 1954 till almost 50 years later. But now the Meskwaki Settlement School serves that community all the way through the high school level teaching. But the key thing about her as an educator that we want to mention is that she created a textbook on the Meskwaki language. It is so critical to the survival of the tribe and the continuation of their traditions that they master their language and be able to use that in ceremonies and in their religious ceremonies and things. And so Adeline becomes a pivotal figure. She worked with linguists at the Smithsonian to document their language, and they are the prototype for the Algonquin language because it's unadulterated. They lived in an enclave, which meant they did not alter their language from its original state. And so nationally, as a linguist and a scholar, she's important. And then I want to mention one more thing. She was a very talented artist, and she did yarn belt weaving, and those examples can be seen in our museum at the State Historical Society in Des Moines and also at the Meskwaki Cultural Center Museum at the Meskwaki Settlement. She was the first woman to serve on their tribal council and served 2 4-year terms. So these are just her biography notes, but she, I have to say that her methodology and personality has also been transmitted through her children. Her son, Don Wannity, served on many state boards, as did Adeline, and her daughter, Suzanne, has really helped to build their tribal court system. And her other granddaughter has helped with the Food Sovereignty Initiative out there. They're very quiet, thoughtful leaders, and they've shaped the future of the tribe in many ways.
There are so many truly remarkable things about her, and I think that it's important to note that the federal government in the United States worked very hard to really stamp out Native cultures. And so the fact that she was able to create that textbook on the Meskwaki language is such a powerful action to save that culture, to preserve that culture, which is a living contemporary culture of ours.
Exactly.
Here in Iowa and in the United States. What does it mean? What do you think it means to have this park and creek named after Adeline Wannity?
I think it's an important positive step forward, and I'll tell you why. There's a thread that runs back in this story. In 1847, the United States government was trying to move the Meskwaki to Kansas, where they could not survive. They didn't have any housing and provisions in an environment they were used to living in. And they said, our children are rapidly dying off. So they went to citizens of Marion, Iowa, which is in direct vicinity of this park, and they had them sign a petition to the United States Congress saying that we can live in peace. And so this, to me, is a continuous thread between the white citizens. Even though they were the dominant culture, they were willing to live peaceably with the Meskwaki in 1852, and they were willing to put their names on a piece of paper to say so. That's significant, but the Meskwaki are the only tribe in the United States in the 19th century that turned around and bought their own land so they were not displaced to reservation and have their culture erased over time. So we have a very distinctive history here in Iowa with our Native American history, and this Linn County story dates all the way back hundreds of years, but 1852, and now here we are in 2010, tying those threads together.
Mary Bennett, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity. I appreciate it.
Mary Bennett, Special Collections Coordinator with the State Historical Society of Iowa. We've been talking about Adeline Wannity. Now, Wannity Creek and Wannity Park in Marion are named after her. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Dennis Reese, Matt Alvarez, and Rick Brewer. I'm Charity Nevy. You can get in touch with us anytime. Just email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the name of the show. This is Talk of Iowa.